Hello and welcome to A View from the Perch, a podcast covering important financial topics from the perspective of two certified financial planners. Each week we give a brief market update, discuss current economic conditions, and provide education on a financial subject. Now here are your hosts, Bill Parrott and Spencer Ngwe.
All right, Bill, a lot to get into, but first, new week, same question. How are the markets?
Let's jump to the next question. It's not good. The Dow's down 670 points today, about 1.75%, or 1.7. I think this is the worst down day point-wise we've had since we started the podcast. And it's, I think, our third week in a row where each category is in negative territory. The S&P is down 0.2, small caps down 2%, international down 0.6, and bonds continue to fall down 1.5%. So again, third week in a row where each category is in negative territory.
Yeah, and I feel like it's coming off of the news that the United States economy slowed a little bit. It still grew, but less than anticipated, I think at 1.6, 1.7%. And then a lot of people, which people have been clamoring for, but I guess because CPI is still at 3.7, people said, this is bad. And that's kind of what they're reacting to. Like, what's the realistic effect that these two numbers are going to have on the economy as a whole?
Yeah, well, I think it's a combination of two things. One, the economic data continues to come in hot. And so interest rates are rising significantly. The 10-year at 4.7, and that's a key bellwether. So the inflation data, the economic data, is not going the right way. If you want the government to lower rates, the economy is strong, and apparently people don't like that, so they're selling off. But now we're starting to factor in earnings, and today Caterpillar, Southwest, IBM, Meta are taking the market down pretty aggressively, and so earnings are coming in lighter than expected. A lot of people have been putting in are placing their hopes on a strong earnings season, and so far it's mixed. And so when you factor in below average earnings or below analyst estimate earnings, mm-hmm. and a hotter economy and rising rates, people are saying, sayonara, I'm selling, I'm out of here. I'll talk to you in September.
Yeah, but where are they going?
Cash, because you can get 5.25, 5.3% right now, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So if you are a money manager, and things don't look right to you, you're like, you know, I'm going to park it in cash for a little bit, hang out, let the dust settle, get my 5% interest. I'll worry about this later. Mm-hmm. When rates were zero, there was no other alternative. They had nowhere to go. But now with interest rates elevated, they're like, hey, I'm going to park my cash 5%. Good to go. I'm going to take a summer vacation and I'll see you in the fall.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So kind of looking forward to the rest of the year, we had such a strong first quarter. It seems we're having a very bad second quarter. Mm-hmm. And it kind of your experience when we've had these two juxtaposed together, good versus bad, which one kind of overtakes if nothing astronomical happens?
Well, historically, it would favor a strong start.
Okay.
And typically when the market is up as much as it was in the first quarter, you know, 9 or 10%, historically the markets ended well.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the second quarter, we didn't have a lot of volatility. And in April, we have a lot of volatility. So we'll see. But historically, it favors a strong start because you have that momentum. But when you follow a strong year like last year, and then you have a strong start this year, people get overly optimistic.
Mm.
And they raise estimates significantly. People have unrealistic expectations about their returns. You know, last week we talked about, you know, some clients were upset they weren't earning 30%.
Mm.
So everybody changes their mindset and like, oh, well, now 20 or 30% is the norm, and they don't pay attention to the valuations of the stock. And then when you get a little hiccup, stocks fall, people get upset, markets correct,
yep.
and then it starts the process all over again. So you really have to have an even keel and not get overly excited when stocks are rising and not get overly depressed when they're falling. The client called in yesterday and he said, oh, tough market today. I said, yes. I said, but wait till tomorrow. He said, well, what's happening? So, well, we had some high profile companies miss earnings and, you know, here we are. So a lot of it is about managing your expectations. And again, when the market does well, people raise the bar significantly. When the market does poorly, they lower it too far. Mm-hmm. And it's never good to play the extremes in the market.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So kind of where's your concern level out after 3 weeks of negative territory? I think all for similar reasons, but a little bit different. We had the Middle East tension, we had CPI, and now we're having missed earnings. Kind of where's your concern meter at?
It's low. Again, we've talked about this, I think, since the beginning of the year, where earnings are still good overall. Interest rates are about where they've been historically. I guess my concern is in the economic data, but that concern is muted because I don't think the Fed's going to raise rates.
Yeah.
So if they do nothing, eventually things will work out. So it's pretty low, and we're running into the part of the calendar where historically volatility has increased and returns are muted, and that's that May to August timeframe. You know, the famous saying to sell in May and go away. And so we may see a little bit of that, but it's low. I'm not overly concerned right now.
Yeah, I would agree. Because even with mixed earnings, we still had some solid earnings from some companies, and we're having Alphabet and some of these more high-profile AI companies come out today. So I'm also not too concerned or overly concerned. And like you said, CPI and inflation might be hotter than anticipated, but it's not as hot where the Fed has even talked about raising rates. And
No. We
talked about this in a lot on the show that, hey, if rates just stay where they are, it's not the end of the world. It's actually probably a good thing to have good income on your fixed income side rather than just being so concerned with rate cuts. So agreed.
It's almost like a Seinfeld episode, right? George Costanza goes to the doctor and the doctor tells him he's fine and he's all upset because he wants to be sick. And you could just imagine that conversation with George and Jerry. But it's odd because people are so fixated on interest rates that I think they're missing a bigger picture.
Would agree. Like when you talk about, hey, you can't get too high with the highs and too low with the lows, it seems as if 95% of the market doesn't take heed to that advice.
There's no middle ground in the marketplace. People either happy or depressed. Yep. You know, it's like, my stocks are up, I'm in a good mood. My stocks are down, I'm in a bad mood. And that's not a good place to be.
No, not at all. Well, excellent. Let's transition over into our empowering education, and we're going to be talking about growth versus value stocks because kind of an anomaly, but value since the downturn and some of the tech stocks year to date is actually up over growth stocks. So kind of just define what growth and value, what we mean by that, and then we can kind of jump into it.
Yes. So growth stocks are companies like Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, NVIDIA. They're growing faster than normal. Their earnings are strong. They typically don't have a lot of debt, and if it were a car, it'd be a Porsche. Value stocks are banks: J.P. Morgan, B of A, energy like Exxon. And then you have other industrial companies like Caterpillar, and that would be like a Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. You know, and growth stocks typically trade at elevated valuations, higher PE ratios, and other metrics that most value investors don't like, because they look at or want to see stocks with low PE ratios, high dividend yields, good value. And, you know, really, who doesn't want to get value? Who doesn't want to pay 50 cents for a dollar? You know, no one wants to pay $1.50 to get a dollar back. So value has a romantic ring to it. You know, like, oh, I got a good value on this car or this home or this watch or this painting. But growth stocks, again, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, are typically newer companies, faster growing companies, and probably what most people own in their portfolio today.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that analogy. Value, you're getting a solid price on a vehicle, but then the growth would be, oh, I got the new top-end line that has all this advancing. It might be more expensive, but look how cool these gadgets are, and it's the future, right?
Yeah.
So kind of why has growth outperformed value for, I went back to 2004, and it seems as if growth is up 500% compared to value for the Vanguard, the VUG and the VTV versus the VTV at 200 instead of the 500.
So you can go back to 1994 and growth is up like 2,600% and value is up 1,800%. If you started investing in 1975 and you had two funds, value and growth, well, your value has outperformed growth starting in 1975. But over the last 1, 3, 5, 10, 20, and 30 years, growth has decimated value stocks. So my theory, and no one's been able to answer this question, so pre-internet, companies were valued by plants and equipment, inventory. You could walk into a store and physically see the nuts and bolts. You could see what they had in their storage yards, in their warehouses. And an analyst can go and count up all the things that that company owned and say, okay, this company is worth X. If they sold everything today, it's worth X plus one. The stock is trading below that. That is good value. Okay. So post-internet, companies like Facebook, Google, they don't have plant and equipment. If they do, it's minor. If they wanted to, they could send everybody home and save $1 billion or more on real estate. And so the growth companies of today and the internet companies of today, you know, it's their intellectual property, it's their employees that they have. So my theory is that that growth value divide no longer exists, because companies now take advantage of the internet. It's much leaner, but the growth companies don't have all that overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of these companies were started in a dorm room and then blew up to major companies overnight. And now, like if you and I were going to start a new company and we were brainstorming, it's not likely we're going to start an airline company, right? Like we would not say, let's go build a 747 and sell it today. We would probably start an internet-based company, minimal overhead. And so I think that's been the biggest difference, is that internet age of companies today, the growth companies today, don't have a lot of that legacy inventory, plant and equipment, real estate that so many analysts valued in the past. And but no one's been able to say, yeah, that's the reason, but that's my theory.
Yeah. Is also, it seems as if like you're a growth company, but then you kind of graduate that out. Once you stop getting, you know, an extreme vertical tilt, and then they kind of move you into the value, and they said, oh, now your value, since you've lost those huge gains that you occurred at the beginning of your company. I could see that being the case as well.
That's a great point. And the kiss of death used to be, as soon as a company started paying a dividend, it's no longer a growth company.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft, Intel, Apple. When Microsoft paid a dividend, everybody's like, okay, that's it. They're done. But that hasn't slowed them down at all.
Yeah.
Not a lick. So the dividend used to be a key indicator of the value. It probably still is, but it's not the kiss of death in terms of a growth company that all of a sudden says, hey, we're going to start paying a dividend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good kind of mirage of thing that's going on for the long term. But I kind of wanted to focus on growth and value for this year, the short term. Yeah. I know it's not great to do, but I think this is in this environment, when we're having rates that might stay elevated, when we're having tensions in the Middle East, when we're having volatility in the marketplace and in our economy, what's kind of the mixture? What do you think versus when we're talking about growth versus value?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have an answer there, but typically when things hit the fan, markets go south, people are nervous, value typically does well because mm-hmm. no one's going to get rid of their cereal, their Diet Coke,
yes,
their McDonald's hamburger, their Budweiser, certainly not their Budweiser. but they are likely to maybe stop spending on other categories. Mm-hmm. So the consumer staple stocks usually do pretty well. Utility stocks usually do pretty well yep. during times of turmoil, mistrust, and confusion. And with high interest rates, it also favors those value companies because they could raise prices. Like if you, well, we've talked about this before, but if you go into a supermarket, things are pretty elevated price-wise. But growth companies do not do well in a high interest rate environment, or typically don't do well, because the cost of financing goes up significantly mm-hmm. and that eats into their profit. But yeah, so if we do run into a turbulent market, then value should outperform. And I think it's outperforming this year by a slight margin.
Yeah, it's like 5 to 4.8 is the last time yeah. I looked it up. And
that but it's outperforming.
It is outperforming. That's correct. And yeah, I think that's a good point. So I did some research on the allocation defensive wise when we talk about consumer defense, utilities, and healthcare.
Yeah.
Your value was about 32% rather than your growth fund, which is at 9%.
Okay.
And then also for your cyclicals, your value, now this was a little bit surprising to me. The value was at 31%. The growth was actually at 23%, so about a 9% difference, a lot closer than the defense sector that we saw. And I would agree with you. It seems as if when interest rates get elevated or just when uncertainty occurs, people are more likely to say, I don't need that new laptop versus I don't need diapers for like, because for example, the top five holdings of value stockers, Berkshire Hathaway, Broadcom.com, which is the second one, which I felt was interesting, JP Morgan, Exxon, United Healthcare, and then Procter & Gamble, which was my example. And then for your growth, it's Meta, Apple, NVIDIA, Amazon, and Meta, or Microsoft is the first, sorry. And so I guess my question to you would be, are we growing into a society where these top five are actually staples, but we just don't want to label them as that? Like we say, oh, consumer cyclicals, we're never going to not turn on the lights, but are we ever going to not use our Apple device? Are we ever not going to use or go on Meta or buy something from Amazon? I guess that's my question.
Well, value is in the eye of the beholder. And fund managers, analysts, advisors can justify anything. But it's true. Can you try to imagine a day where you did not use a Microsoft, an Apple, or an Amazon product or service?
No.
Or Google?
No. Yeah, exactly. Alphabet. No, not even close.
So we could almost say those are utilities, right? Like we cannot function without our Microsoft Office package.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'd have to buy an Apple package, exactly. But they would run Microsoft products, right? Because mm-hmm. we use Word, Excel all the time. So yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I would almost consider those companies staples today. Like mm-hmm. you cannot live your life without those four companies. I don't think you can. Because what's the first thing that somebody says when you don't know the answer? What do they say?
Google it. Yeah.
Yeah. And between you and me right now, we could probably count a dozen Apple products right now in our office, in our home.
But I guess going a little bit deeper into that, because these stocks don't have as much, you know, book value is what we'll call it, because those physical tools, their prices are elevated, so they have more room to decrease when it comes to recession rather than a value stock where it's like, I know if I sold everything in the company, this is what it would be worth. I mean, Microsoft is trading at $389 per stock. And so it's like, that can decrease because there's not really anything attached to it that says, oh, this shouldn't be less than whatever number you want to give it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a great point. Because of Microsoft, if another company came out and was better than Microsoft, it would go poof. But but historically, its valuation is not elevated. Mm. And so we have to separate price and value from that equation. But yeah, like if you have a company like, let's take Southwest Airlines, well, they would just sell all their planes and terminals and whatnot, and you can get some money back. You know, what's Facebook going to sell? Or Google?
Yeah.
You know, here's some laptops. You know, it's a good point. But yes, they could fall farther. But at one point, Microsoft, you know, during the tech wreck in 2008, 2009, it was cheap.
Mm.
Very cheap. And so at that point, it offered tremendous value, even though it was a growth stock.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I love how the value is just, it's kind of this word we use, but it can be morphed into a lot of different things. So once we're kind of putting a bow on this, because I think growth versus value, really value is just so difficult to ascribe a single value to it. Ironically, it's really kind of what the investor says. So short term wise, are you more attracted to value right now or growth? And then we'll do long term as well.
Well, I'm going to use 30 years of data and stay with the growth trade because, again, they could just turn on the earnings spigot faster than value companies. But we have, you know, strong positions in both because you just never know what's going to move quickly. And trying to place a bet on growth or value is challenging because they zig and they zag, even though growth, obviously, like I said, has done well over 30 years. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. If I were a betting man, I'd probably put it on growth.
Yeah. And I guess that was the follow-up question is, once we do see that growth has, you know, outperformed for the past 30 years, are you getting more enticed to maybe getting a little bit more overweight with growth comparatively to value, or do you want to keep those even or have value be overweight? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think we have a slight tilt towards value because we have like international exposure and small cap exposure and things like that. But our large cap exposure is a little more growth oriented, but I'd probably still lean towards growth. And, you know, if somebody kept showing up to the racetrack with Secretariat, I'm betting on Secretariat to win, regardless of how old that horse is or what it's done in the past. But again, trying to say that Microsoft and Apple and Amazon won't continue to do well is not smart, not wise.
Yeah. It's just crazy, though, because in 2022, like, NVIDIA had a horrible year. Apple didn't have a great year. Amazon did not have a great year. Meta had a horrible year.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy how much a year is different because people are like, these guys will never lose. Well, they just lost a year ago. So I don't know. That's my kind of thoughts when I have growth versus value, but I'd have to agree with you. I do believe these names have become staples if they're not already. And I just don't see them going anywhere. Like, the price might decrease significantly, but we had a huge increase in the past 2 years from these names. So it seems as if they're able to rebound pretty easily.
Well, at the end of the day, valuation matters. What you pay for something matters. And during the tech wreck, when stocks peaked in 1999, Microsoft took 17 years to recover that all-time high.
Really?
And Cisco has still not recovered their all-time price high from the tech wreck in 2000. So at some point you do have to, well, you always have to look at the valuations of the company and say, is this price worth it? Does it make sense to buy this stock at this price? But so many people do not look at valuations. They just focus on price. They don't look under the hood and say, hey, is the company making money? Mm-hmm. Are their earnings growing? What is their debt level like? What's their cash flow like? They just take it for granted that, oh, it's Microsoft, it's going to go higher. And you have to do your homework. You have to crunch numbers and say, okay, this is a decent price. I'm going to go and buy it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree completely. Anything else you'd like to talk about when we're discussing growth versus value?
It goes back to diversification. Hindsight's 2020. Obviously, we should have put everything in growth, large cap growth, for the last 30 years, and we'd be living large. But you just never know. And we've talked about in the past where there are different time periods where large cap growth hasn't done anything, and you were glad you had value or international or small caps or whatever. So diversification is still the name of the game.
Yeah, I think we can boil
it. And I should add, you know, the king of value investing is Warren Buffett,
yes,
by far, obviously. But some of his best investments have been small cap growth companies. He bought Geico, which was counter to what he'd been taught. See's Candy, counter to what he'd been taught. And so he diverted from his value orientation, and some of his best winnings have been growth companies. And his largest holding right now is Apple.
Yep.
And think about this. His best friend is Bill Gates. But he never purchased Microsoft in his company
portfolio. Yeah.
Think about if Berkshire had purchased Microsoft at its IPO.
Yeah. Would it change their identity, though? Because if they had Microsoft, they would be like, oh, Berkshire Hathaway is actually, I mean, he did invest in Apple and Geico, but I feel like if you did Microsoft, it would have been Microsoft and Apple are his two biggest holdings. Is this guy really a growth or is he value? So it's a good question, though.
Well, let me ask a question. If people are making a lot of money, would they care?
Yes. No, you're right. It doesn't matter.
But let me throw something out here. So since Microsoft went public, what percentage gain do you think they're up?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I know it's a lot.
160,000%.
It's a lot.
So let's look at that. What is that on an average annual basis? Let's do that real quickly here.
Because they went into the IPO in early 90s, right?
Yep. So let's see here. So they've been annualizing. I'm sorry, it's only 402,000%.
Okay. Yeah.
So they've been annualizing at 24% per year.
Wow. But that does that take into account the stock splits that they've done?
Everything.
Wow.
Stock splits, dividends, crashes, corrections, overvalued, undervalued. So if you bought it on the IPO, you've averaged 24%. So what does that mean? If you put 10 grand into that IPO, you're sitting on $40 million today.
That would be nice.
So I don't think people would be too concerned with the description of Berkshire Hathaway.
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, I think I agree. It boils down to really two things. I think we say a lot is stay in your seat, stay invested, be comfortable, and then diversify. And because growth and value, they're both solid investments, but yes. I believe the danger is when you get too overweight in each one of them. Say, oh, I'm tired of growth. I don't believe in it. And you just go value and you underperform. You say, I'm tired of value. It's a laggard. I go to growth. And then you have periods in which growth does absolutely nothing. So I just think diversification is, because both of them are good investments. We're doing versus, but it's not bad versus good. It's good versus great or good, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, like if you had Secretariat, you know, it kept beating Sham in the 70s. But if you had Sham, you had one of the best horses of all time. It just came along at the wrong point in history. And you can't say one or the other.
Yeah. Well, excellent. I think that's a good empowering education. Now we're transitioning to our financial, our faithful finance. And when you talk about going under the hood and valuation matters, it immediately made me think of this verse in Luke 14:28. It says, for which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the costs, whether he has enough to complete it? And I think that is just so prudent when it comes to our finances. Is we might chase that hot thing. We might pick up, you know, whatever we want, get the quick rich get rich quick scheme. Mm-hmm. However, I think really faithfully investing your financing and being a good steward over it is sitting down, researching the company, researching the fund. What has occurred? Is this a worthwhile investment for me? Let's plan it rather than just get so emotional where it's like, oh, I need to jump into this investment right now. Because with investing in stocks and bonds, it's a little bit more different or a little bit more. It is more different than sitting down and investing into a project or things of that nature where you actually have to count physical materials. Same thing with value and growth, where it's like, oh, I have to put this much down. Rather, with stocks, it's just such a low barrier of entry. You're able to just jump in. I think that sometimes we don't step back and, hey, let's count the costs. Let's do the opportunity costs. In the same manner, may and go away, sell and may and go away. Mm-hmm. We counted the costs on what holding cash is rather than putting it in some more growth-oriented or even more value-oriented stock positions.
Yeah, I mean, you just bought a home. Did you pay attention to cost and value and expenses?
I did. It was daunting. Yeah. Because you have to, and that's a good point, is like you might be able to afford the down payment. However, can you afford the rate? Can you afford the monthly mortgage? That's something that I had to do a lot of fine tweaking and thinking about, saying, okay, I'm going to increase my monthly rent expense for the process of being able to own this and not have to just, and make sure I'm getting an ROI on my investment. But that's still scary. And you still have to, because I hate spending. So it's like, I'm going to increase my spending by $150 a month. I don't want to do that. But can I do it first and foremost? And does it make sense to do it? Is something that I made sure to take into consideration.
Yeah. I mean, that's excellent points. And again, most people, when they buy stock, they don't pay attention to the cost or the value. They just focus on the name and it's like, oh, okay, that's good. But everything else they pay attention to, buying a home,
yep,
buying lunch, a new car, shoes, whatever, but not so much with stock.
Yeah. Which is ironic because most people's net worth, a majority of it is in retirement and investment assets, regardless, outside of your personal home. But it's just something where we don't really count the cost for. So when I was thinking about growth versus value, and especially when it came to kind of these outlandish stocks that where you can just invest on a name basis, I really thought, hey, why don't we see what it's about rather than just say, let's go, right? I think that's a better way.
Like I said, a lot of life's problems can be solved with a calculator.
That is correct. Just doing the calculations. Love it. Well, Bill, solid episode, even though we had some bad news. Kind of what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Well, again, diversification is a key, but during difficult markets, the urge might be to sell your stock, park your money in bonds or a money market fund and wait, but that usually is not a good long-term strategy. So I would encourage people to buy the dip, focus on the long-term, and diversify their accounts.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.